Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. On May 20th, 2016, just after 3 p.m., a vehicle was seen rolling across three lanes of southbound traffic on Interstate 5 near Maytown, Washington. The vehicle was unoccupied, drifting along as oncoming cars slowed down or swerved to avoid it, until finally the vehicle collided with the center barrier and came to a halt near mile marker 92. Three separate people called 911 about the abandoned vehicle. Police arrived at the scene and the car was soon towed to a nearby impound lot. The 1996 black Chrysler Sebring belonged to 19-year-old Logan Schindelman, and at the time that his car was found abandoned and wrecked on Interstate 5, Logan's family had not seen or heard from him in more than 24 hours. On May 23, 2016, 3 days after his car was found, Logan Schindelman was officially reported missing. To understand how we got here, let's go back to the beginning. Seattle, Washington, 1995. Single mother Hannah Schindelman was raising her young daughter Chloe when she met an engineer from Saudi Arabia living in the United States on a work visa. Hannah had a brief relationship with the man, and he ultimately ended up returning to Saudi Arabia. But Hannah was pregnant with his child. It's unclear whether she ever reached out to the man to tell him that he was going to be a father. On June 27, 1996, Hannah gave birth to her second child, a boy who she named Logan. At the time that Logan was born, his older half-sister Chloe was around 4 years old. Logan Drew Schindelman grew up in Tumwater, Washington, a city of about 25,000 that sits 1 hour southwest of Seattle. Logan grew up not knowing anything about his father, but he did grow up very close to his grandmother, Ginny, who was Hannah's mother. In fact, Ginny became Logan and Chloe's primary caretaker when they were very young. When Logan was about 2 years old, his mother Hannah was considering moving closer to Seattle and possibly attending art school, and because Hannah and the kids already lived with Ginny, it was an easy transition. As a child, Logan was bright and sociable. And early on, he developed a love for sports. He always maintained good grades, and in high school he became a popular and talented football player on Tumwater High School's team. But during his senior year of high school, despite his thriving social life and star athlete status, Logan started struggling emotionally and mentally. At a party during his senior year, Logan had what was described as his first experience with racism. It's important here to get a bit deeper into Logan's family history. Logan's mother, Hannah, is biracial. Ginny, who is white, had a relationship with a black man in her 20s, and together they had Hannah. But Hannah's father was not really a part of her life, and she never had much interaction with the rest of her father's family either. And as we know, Hannah later met a Saudi Arabian man, and together they conceived Logan. Logan grew up biracial in a predominantly white city. While, according to Ginny and others in his family, this didn't seem to bother Logan growing up and he never seemed to notice that he looked different from the rest of his family, the incident at that party during his senior year certainly struck a chord with him. According to Ginny, a girl at that party made racist remarks directed at Logan. Some of Logan's friends were at that party, and while they later claimed that they did not condone that girl's racism, not a single one of them stood up for Logan that night. Logan ended up calling Ginny to pick him up from that party, and when she did, he was visibly upset and probably quite emotionally shaken. After that incident, Logan's personality seemed to shift. His experience at that party that night was possibly the catalyst to Logan questioning his life as he knew it. Why had he never met his grandfather's side of the family? Were the friends he grew up with ever really his friends? It was also around this time that Logan became a frequent marijuana smoker. While it does aid many people with medical issues, anxiety, and general stress, according to those who knew Logan, his marijuana use coincided with his seemingly declining mental health and withdrawal from his formerly vibrant social life. After graduating high school in 2014, Logan's plans for college changed. Originally, he intended to go to Eastern Washington University and planned on rooming with one of his high school friends. But soon after that incident at the party, Logan applied to Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, and he was accepted, so he decided to go there instead. This was a shock to his friends. Several of the people he had been closest to throughout school were going to Eastern Washington University, and at the time, they couldn't figure out why Logan had abruptly changed his mind. It was around that time that Logan had begun to cut off communication with his old friends altogether. He wasn't as social, and he would often ignore their messages. Washington State University is over 300 miles away from Logan's hometown of Tumwater, and he was excited about getting a fresh start as he entered adulthood. To be fair, Eastern Washington University is also about 300 miles away from Tumwater. But the point was that Logan abruptly decided that he simply did not want to go to the same university as his old high school friends. Shortly before he started college, Logan reached out to his grandfather's side of the family for the first time, and they welcomed him warmly with open arms. He was introduced to that side of his family by his great-grandmother, Ginny's mother. According to Logan's great-aunt Tina, they were all thrilled to finally be in contact with Logan. Tina told Dateline, quote, "It was love at first sight to see him, because he looks just like my brother at that age," end quote. Her brother was Logan's grandfather. Tina also told Dateline that when Logan met the rest of his family, he commented, quote, "It just feels so good to see someone that looks like me," end quote. Logan didn't get to meet an entire half of his family until he was 18 years old, so this was profound for him. After experiencing racism and feeling the pain of realizing that his white friends would not stand up for him, Logan was feeling more validated in his identity. Logan and his great-aunt Tina kept in touch through Facebook as he began his college journey. Logan seemed happy during his freshman year of college, but he socialized perhaps a bit too much. At some point, Logan stopped attending his classes. He did not make passing grades, and after his freshman year at Washington State, he was ultimately not permitted to re-enroll due to his poor academic performance. Now, Logan always maintained excellent grades in high school, and while high school and college are vastly different experiences, especially academically, it was not characteristic of Logan to be so neglectful of his schoolwork and grades, essentially his future. After his freshman year at Washington State, Logan moved back to Tumwater to live with his grandmother Ginny again. His older half-sister, Chloe, also still lived with Ginny. Logan's mother, Hannah, lived a few miles away in the town of Olympia. However, after leaving college, Logan stopped communicating with his great-aunt Tina and the rest of that side of his family that he was so excited to meet prior to college. In fact, Logan had stopped communicating with nearly everyone he had been close to previously. After returning home to Tumwater, Logan began working a variety of jobs. He worked for a laundry service and even regularly did some work on his Aunt Mary and Uncle Mike's farm. Sometime in 2015, Ginny allowed Chloe's boyfriend at the time, Jacob, to move into the house as well. Sometimes, Jacob's children would also stay over to visit. Logan was reportedly not thrilled about the arrangement. He took issue with Jacob for a few reasons. Back in 2013, Jacob pleaded guilty to felony assault in a previous relationship, so he had a history of domestic violence. According to Ginny, there were incidents between Chloe and Jacob where things became physical. There was even one incident where Logan intervened and stood up for his sister. Ginny has always maintained that while Logan and Jacob did not particularly like each other, there were never any actual altercations between them. But according to Logan's Aunt Mary and Uncle Mike, there was at least one incident where Logan and Jacob got into a physical altercation, Which story is the truth? Perhaps both contain elements of the real story. We'll never know for certain. Mary and Mike have also stated in the past that Logan somewhat opened up to them about the tension in the house and how he didn't get along with Jacob. At this time in Logan's life, he had also recently learned the truth about his father. It's not clear whether Logan actively tried to reach out to his father or whether his father had ever even been told about Logan. Needless to say, Logan was caught in a riptide of emotional turmoil. Feeling betrayed by his longtime friends, experiencing the pain of racism, failing his first year of college, finding out about his father, his stressful and tense living situation. It would not be far-fetched to say that Logan was feeling lost. Something I think we all have felt at one point or another, especially as we first ventured into the chaos of adulthood. On the morning of May 18th, 2016, around 7:30 in the morning, Ginny was in the kitchen preparing to head to work when Logan came in, appearing as though he had been awake for a while. It was unusual for Logan to be up and about that early. He had gotten into the habit of staying up until 3 or 4 in the morning and sleeping well into the afternoon. That morning, according to Ginny, Logan told her that he'd had an epiphany about who he was. He also told her that he didn't know if he was going to make it that week. There has been wide speculation about that statement being ominously prophetic, or being Logan's attempt to warn his grandmother that he was having grim thoughts. But truthfully, it's likely that it was more so a figure of speech. I'm sure most of us can recall a time where we thought, or perhaps even said aloud, "Man, I don't know how I'm going to survive this," or something similar. It's my personal belief that Logan was simply expressing how stressed and maybe even downtrodden he felt with everything going on in his life at the time.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
After Logan told Ginny about his epiphany, Ginny asked him what he meant, but Logan brushed it off and said that it was too difficult to explain. So Ginny told him that they would talk more about it when she got home from work later that evening. Later that day, Ginny texted Logan some words of reassurance, and he responded telling her that he loved her. Ginny returned home from work sometime around 5:30 p.m. that evening. She has stated that she doesn't remember seeing Logan at the house when she got home. This is where the timeline gets a bit fuzzy. If you've listened to the Hide and Seek podcast by James Basinger, specifically Season 2, Episode 1, you'll recall that Ginny couldn't seem to clearly remember the exact dates of specific details and occurrences leading up to Logan's disappearance. If you haven't listened to the podcast, I highly recommend it if you're looking for a deep dive into Logan's case. And again, that's the Hide and Seek podcast. Season 2 covers Logan's disappearance. According to Ginny, the day after Logan's epiphany, May 19th, 2016, she got up that morning to go to work and did not see Logan around the house. But according to the Hide and Seek podcast, the case file states that after Ginny left for work that morning, Logan's sister Chloe saw him leaving the house sometime that afternoon. Chloe's statement is the reason why police have a description of what Logan was wearing when he left. Ginny could not corroborate Chloe's statement, because Ginny was at work for most of the day and it was only Chloe at the house. According to Ginny, when she returned home from work that evening, Logan was still not home and his car was not in the driveway. Strangely, though, the TV from his bedroom had been moved and placed in the living room. At that point, Logan was not responding to calls or texts from Ginny. It was on the evening of May 19th that Ginny used a program built into her phone plan to check Logan's location. The ping showed Logan, or at least his phone, near his mother Hannah's house, a few miles away in the town of Olympia. Assuming that Logan had probably gone to his mother's house, as he sometimes did, Ginny didn't think anything of it. The next day, May 20th, 2016, Ginny started growing concerned about Logan's absence and his lack of communication. At that point, she hadn't heard from him in nearly 2 full days. According to Jenny, she and Hannah haven't exactly been on speaking terms for a number of years. But she did contact Hannah on May 20th to ask her if Logan had stayed overnight at her house. Hannah stated that she hadn't seen Logan in several days, and that no, he had not spent the night of May 19th at her house. Jenny, Chloe, and Hannah all tried texting Logan, but none of them got a response. That day, Jenny went to the Thurston County Sheriff's Office to report Logan missing, but the office was closed for the weekend. Instead of calling 911 to make the report, she opted to wait it out until Monday. On May 23, 2016, Jenny officially reported her grandson, 19-year-old Logan Schindelman, as a missing person. Jenny gave them Logan's vehicle information, and when an officer ran Logan's license plate number through their system, they got a hit. It turned out that Logan's vehicle had been impounded 3 days earlier, on May 20th, after it was found abandoned and wrecked on the interstate. And now we're back on Interstate 5, near Tumwater, Washington, southbound, near mile marker 92. It was May 20th, 2016. Logan Schindelman's family had been trying to reach him all day, even driving around looking for him near his mother's house, where his phone last pinged. Meanwhile, just after 3 p.m., three separate people called 911 to report that a vehicle was drifting across the southbound side of Interstate 5, crossing 3 lanes of traffic and causing oncoming vehicles to slow down or swerve to avoid a collision. The callers were unsure whether the vehicle was abandoned or whether the driver needed medical attention. Surely abandonment wouldn't be their first thought. Why and how would a completely unoccupied vehicle be rolling across the interstate? The first 911 caller was a truck driver. He was actually traveling on the northbound side of Interstate 5, but he got a clear view of the vehicle. He saw it drifting from the slow lane. But he saw something else, too. A white man jumped out of the passenger side of the car and ran into the nearby woods as the vehicle continued drifting into oncoming traffic. It's important to note that later, this truck driver was shown a picture of Logan, and he confirmed that Logan was not the person that he saw jump out of the car and run into the woods. The other two 911 callers were both traveling on the southbound side of the interstate and had to slow down to avoid colliding with the abandoned car. They saw it roll from the slow lane diagonally across the road until it hit the center barrier and came to a stop. Neither of these two callers witnessed anyone jumping out of the passenger side of the car, like the truck driver had. It's possible that by the time the second two callers saw the reckless vehicle and made the decision to call 911, the mysterious person was long gone. Sure enough, when officers arrived on the scene, the vehicle was completely unoccupied. But they wouldn't know until 3 days later that that car belonged to a missing person. Fast forward to May 23, 2016, when Jenny went to the Thurston County Sheriff's Office to report Logan missing. An officer ran Logan's plates, and that's when Jenny learned that Logan's car had been impounded 3 days earlier. When Jenny went to the impound lot to retrieve Logan's car, she found several of his belongings. In the car was Logan's wallet, including his license and debit cards, and fast food bags containing food wrappers, specifically 2 Nature Valley granola bar wrappers. Also inside one of the fast food bags was $24 in cash. There were other random items like clothing and a towel. And possibly the most important item found in Logan's car was his phone. It was completely dead. Logan's car was retrieved from the impound lot and driven back to Jenny's house before it was processed for potential forensic evidence. When police started investigating Logan's phone records, they learned that Logan, or at least his phone, had made an unexplained road trip in the hours before his car was left abandoned on Interstate 5. Location data showed that a few hours before Logan's car was impounded, Logan's phone traveled about 100 miles on Interstate 5, from Olympia down to Vancouver, Washington, before turning around and traveling back to Olympia. Soon after that, Logan's car and phone were headed southbound on I-5 again, where his car was found a few hours later. The thing about this bizarre road trip is that while investigators know for a fact that Logan's phone made the trip, likely in his car, there was no way to confirm whether it was Logan behind the wheel or someone else entirely. Shortly after this 100-mile trip, Logan's phone seemingly died, and there was no further activity on his phone after the morning hours of May 20th, 2016. Logan's phone only became active again on May 23rd, 2016, when Ginny retrieved his car from the impound lot and found his phone inside. She charged his phone and powered it on, but was unable to access it. Investigators, however, were able to further investigate Logan's phone activity. They learned that in the months before he disappeared, Logan had been communicating with a young woman he met on a dating app. He and the woman had never met in person. But the week that Logan disappeared, Logan had texted something to the woman that eerily echoed a sentiment he later expressed to Ginny, just before he vanished. Just before his disappearance, Logan texted the woman, quote, "I hope to survive this week," end quote. Again, this has stirred up heavy speculation about Logan's state of mind at the time. While I personally believe that this was simply a turn of phrase, and not a morbidly prophetic statement, it does seem clear that Logan was struggling emotionally in the days leading up to his disappearance, and he attempted to express his struggles to more than one person. Sometime after Logan disappeared and his case started garnering publicity, a woman came forward claiming to have seen Logan's car parked on the southbound shoulder of I-5 on the morning of May 20th, 2016, just hours before his car was found wrecked and abandoned. The woman claimed that she saw Logan's black 1996 Chrysler Sebring parked on the right shoulder of southbound Interstate 5 and standing around the car were three men. All appeared to be young, perhaps late teens to mid-20s. One of the men was standing at the rear of the car, near the trunk. He had darker skin and was around 6 feet tall. The woman believed that that man was Logan Schindelman, although that cannot be confirmed. The woman described the other two men she saw that morning as white males, and though a sketch was done of one of those men, nothing ever came of it. Not a trace of Logan has been found since the day that he disappeared. To this day, it is still not clear whether Logan was even the person driving his car when cell phone data tracked his phone's movements up and down the interstate on May 20th, 2016. As far as we know, there are no confirmed sightings of Logan after he left the house for the very last time on May 19th, 2016. The only alleged sighting of Logan after his family last saw him came from the witness who claimed to see him standing by his car on the side of the interstate on the morning of May 20th. So, all of that to say, we simply do not know for certain when Logan actually physically disappeared. And if foul play was involved, we do not know for certain when it occurred. Unfortunately, Logan's mother Hannah and sister Chloe have not made any public statements regarding Logan's disappearance. Chloe was allegedly the last person to see Logan before he left the house and disappeared, but she has never publicly elaborated on that. So much about Logan's case is vague and unexplained. There were even a couple of pieces of information that came up in my research that I chose not to include in this episode, because despite the widespread speculation, the information was either debunked or entirely unsubstantiated. I generally don't like to include unnecessary pieces of information that do nothing to help the case and only fuel rumors and conspiracies. What we do know for certain is that at the time of this recording, Logan has been missing for 8 years, and his family just wants to bring him home. Logan Schindelman was 19 years old at the time of his disappearance on May 19, 2016, from Tumwater, Washington. He is 5 feet 11 inches tall, and at the time he disappeared, he weighed approximately 160 pounds. Logan is biracial and has a darker skin tone, black hair, and brown eyes. His 1996 black Chrysler Sebring convertible was found on May 20, 2016. The vehicle was wrecked and abandoned near mile marker 92 on the southbound side of Interstate 5 near Maytown, Washington. If you have any information on the disappearance of Logan Schindelman, please call the Thurston County Sheriff's Office at 360-786-5500 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously at 1-800-577-8477. If you'd like to request a case to be covered on the show, you'll find a link to a case request form in the show notes. please subscribe to the YouTube channel, where you'll find full episodes, complete with photos relevant to each case. You can follow the podcast on X, formerly Twitter, at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to all social media can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.